This is the Riot Act Super 14 Rugby Review.
Hello and welcome to Season 2, Week 16 of the Riot Act Rugby Review Podcast. Right now we're sitting here listening to Bruce Springsteen's belt out, Born in the USA. Isn't that great?
Which none of us were. But he was.
He was. That's supposedly, right. Weren't you?
Actually, aren't we all Pacificans now?
Except for the referee. Just like to thank lovely All Bar None for accommodating us tonight.
Again. No battle balls this evening.
No Brumbies either.
It's quite late, and no Brumbies. Brumbies all gone away.
No Brumbies.
Yeah, they weren't that mad. They were just really, really drunk.
Yeah.
Well, they were boys out having fun.
They were, and they didn't hurt anyone, and they even swept up after themselves.
So. Good on them. I hope they really enjoyed themselves last Monday night. And I hope
I don't think any of them can remember
just
a damn thing.
Just goes to show their mothers all taught them well.
Yes. Now,
I know a couple
the tips
of them.
Rob, yes, how's the state of play in the
bloody useless, no try
how
scoring.
How far ahead am I?
Bloody useless no score try scoring Crusaders let me down
again.
I reckon they're on the take. Is all I'm saying. Okay, three of us who went for the Crusaders. Well, we didn't do very well. So the scores at the moment are
double points for the finals, of course.
Double points for the finals. So Katina on 50 points.
Yep.
Right. John way out in front on 60.
Yay.
Myself, I'm languishing on 55. Nico, the only one with any chance of catching John, on 56. And Tim also with me on 55.
Now, can I just go back to that? If we're on double points, are we on
it is quad points?
Quad points.
Yes.
So I can draw with
you
John.
You can draw with me.
Sorry? Yes.
But I don't think you're going to.
And then we go on a count back to how many who tipped the most Brumbies bins.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
I think that's
fair. If I was in the most Brumbies game,
if I was in that, I'd be winning. Damn you all to hell.
Damn us all. Anyway.
I think I've been more of a trader than John, actually.
I should say Brumbies results rather than Brumbies wins.
Mm. Right. Yes. Now, let's talk at some length about the games. First one, Sharks 34, Blues 18 in Durban at Kings Park. Absolute squeaker of a game. The lead seat.
Completely trials.
No.
No, sorry. I was thinking of the other one. Sorry.
Yeah, talk about the game we're talking about if we could.
No, both on very late. or early, depending on which way you look at it.
This one, I thought the Sharks... I think the Sharks are vulnerable after this. The Blues nearly had them at a couple of stages of the game. What do you guys think?
I unfortunately didn't get to watch it. I have them both recorded.
Right.
And was very tempted to watch them, and my son woke me up at 1 a.m. this morning, but declined and got my wife out of bed instead.
Right.
Sorry, Penny.
You're such a snag.
Did she watch the games? Can we get her in?
Oh, I don't know. I don't think she did. She might have watched, Nickelodeon Junior or something.
Oh, dear.
But anyway, I guess the Blues have done an awful lot of travel over the last couple of weeks.
They were
in South Africa, they came to Perth, they travelled to Sydney as a staging point.
To go back to South Africa.
Probably
they got the freaking Flyers miles up. They're probably having a really good night as their man Monday tonight.
And no wonder Luke McAllister's heading off overseas. He can travel for free.
In the space of 2 weeks, probably a bit too much travel to overcome. And the Sharks have been at home for a couple of weeks now, have played strongly there all season, and have been a fairly complete outfit. Probably a big ask for the Blues in fairly trying circumstances.
Yeah, I mean, but having said that, the Brumbies have managed to win at Kings Park this season.
They have, didn't have to travel back and forth to do it.
Oh, yeah. But I think international rugby teams are getting better at.
But it's still a day out of his schedule.
Yeah.
Now, the Blues actually hit the lead at some stage during this game.
Yeah, the Blues hit the lead at several stages during this game.
And so I really think that the fact that the Stormers came back from that...
Sharks. This is the Sharks.
I knew what I meant.
Are you, on something? Can you share it with the rest of us?
It's been a long day.
I've got to say, the rugby heaven coverage was constantly mixing up Sharks and Blues and Bulls and Crusaders. In the one article,
they probably had a long night as well when they were watching it.
Yeah. Maybe that's why Nick doesn't know what he's talking about.
All of Blues, Bulls, Sharks, Stormers, they're all...
From rugby heaven.
It's almost as bad when the Blues were playing.
I get lost here.
And the
Blues were in white, and the Force was in blue. So you're saying the Blues are going which way?
We have Greg Rowden at our table.
No, actually. The reason why I'm so confused is I get a lot of my information from Keogh, and most of it's in Afrikaans.
Right. they're quite good at getting their team names right.
they do.
Yeah, but I don't know what they're talking about.
Okay, keep
anyway.
Going.
I reckon this has been a good performance by the Sharks. Or what I'm the show composer to come back and take the game.
I think it was a harder hit up for them. Like it was.
It's probably a good one leading.
I think the Blues were probably the more.
Let's face
difficult
it,
team to play.
Their stolen win in Perth really sort of put them back on the front foot for a little bit.
The Blues,
yeah.
Look,
I think it gave them a bit of a head of steam because they were going so badly for three games.
I don't think the Blues played very well in that game against the Force.
That's what I'm saying. But they stole them.
And they stole their confidence.
Sending Ali Williams home seems to have livened them up as well.
Oh, talking about that's been very lively in the last couple of days with all the claims and counterclaims of massive suings going on. And
it'd be interesting to see if John Mitchell picks up Ali Williams. He seems to like him as a player.
I'm not sure he's eligible to go on the Australian list and play in the...
No,
we don't have that rule of one foreigner in the team like the Poms do.
Technically, the rule is you need to be an Australian resident for 4 years.
Yeah, but they bent that for Tian Strauss.
They bent that for Tian Strauss. They also bent that for this year.
Boner could claim because...
He's granny.
They bet that this year for that Queensland rental prop, whose name escapes me.
Yeah.
It's not Taranaki because that's the club site in New Zealand, but something like that.
Yeah.
And he didn't actually technically qualify for representation.
Look, every grown man in Queensland got offered the job of propping for the Reds scrum this season.
I imagine there would be a few more to take.
A lot of farmers as well.
The Queensland farmer, is that analogous of the New Zealand farmer from the South Island?
Well, obviously not given the piss poor standard of the Reds' defence last week.
Burning sugar cane and picking up bananas isn't quite the same as picking up sheep.
I guess not.
Yes. I think the difference between this game and perhaps the other one in the styles of games that were played, the other one was a very torrid defensive affair, whereas this one a bit more free flowing, scoring tries.
I think
the teams being a bit more creative about scoring tries.
Well, I think this game was a game in the backs, whereas the other game, the Crusaders game, was a game in the forwards.
Let's talk about the Crusaders game when we get to the Crusaders game. In this one, I mean, you've got David Campese coaching the Sharks back line.
Explosive.
They didn't bring him over there and pay him what must have been a significant fortune to get him to live there.
I saw some interviews with him earlier in the year.
Yeah.
And he seemed to be absolutely loving the lifestyle over there, as well as the opportunity to teach these young backs a lot of...
how to be involved in a side that actually uses backs.
And it appears to have worked. And, well, maybe it's not just Campese, but it appears to have been all through South African rugby this year.
Yeah, it does. Have we got anything more we want to say about this game?
I think we can probably move on to the next.
Okay. I think we can talk about, how they're going to play against the Bulls later on.
Yep. So that was Sharks 34, Blues 18, a bit of a blowout at the end of that game. Moving on, Bulls 27, Crusaders 12 in a high-scoring but tryless game.
No bloody tries. That's just pathetic.
Now, I don't think it's pathetic. I think
it was excellent.
The Bulls scored all those tries the week before, and they said the Crusaders are going to be expecting us to throw the ball around again. We're going to do completely the opposite.
Yeah.
And they just said, here's another game plan, and for next week, the Sharks are scratching their heads saying, which Bulls team are we going to be...
It's actually really interesting that the Bulls have been in the position where... That, to be able to fall back to this very traditional style of Bulls play that we've come to expect over a number of years, and to execute it so well against a team with the attacking flair of the Crusaders.
Yeah.
Okay. It's really impressive. How much influence did the ref have over the game with that many penalties going around and getting thrown
around? I think none. Really?
Was it
I think it was fair reffing. I think it was fair reffing.
I think it was balanced reffing.
Well, the South Africans are saying that's because the New Zealanders are good sports.
Yeah, but New Zealanders have complained when they felt they've been hard done by on other occasions, so... I don't know. I think that's why I flipped the Bulls. They are masters of both games, and there are very few teams that you can say that about.
Well, to me, it just shows that the Bulls actually have been studying their opponents, and has been studying their opponents' opposition, and... I don't want to try and give credit where credit isn't due, but perhaps they saw in the previous weeks where the Crusaders had failings, particularly against the Brumbies forwards and all that sort of stuff, and they sort of
Brumbies
said,
and the Chiefs out-muscled them up front, so they said, we're going to go at this one and we're going to crunch them.
We're not going to do our like free-flowing game, we're going to do our like hard defence game, and it worked really well for them.
It's something that doesn't always come off, but this time it has. And I guess you made a comment about the referee.
I was about to say, Rich McCall got pinged a lot of times.
More of a stop-start affair.
But the thing is,
the Bulls have always had very strong defence at the ruck, and this is no exception. And Richie trying to get in there and disrupt it, and being and pinged the for is, it, you it, know,
but
is probably.
But whereas other games, he might have gotten away with it more, and he would have expected he could have.
I think Richie, like our own George Smith, is always on the very bleeding edge of the laws.
Oh yeah, some games
he's going to get away with, and some games he's going to get the whistleblown a lot on him.
So. This one, they had the whistleblown on them 9 times. Eight times and one drop goal.
Well, that's not that many over the course of the game. Normally, you'd see about 15 penalties in a game, and you know, 8 in kickable range. Okay, granted, Derek Hougaard was banging them in from 59 metres,
which is impressive.
Derek Hougaard's boot is such that he will bang them in from a long way back and a long way out to the side.
But they're not going to be able to do that in Durban as well as they can.
I'm
still not convinced about the effect of altitude on kicking distances. The air pressure isn't that different.
Yeah, no, well, I must admit, I don't want to like bring this down to a completely and utterly nerdy level, but I saw a thing on Mythbusters probably a year ago.
Yeah.
Which they did.
They were throwing it.
No, they were firing it out of a machine.
And they were filling it with helium.
Yeah, with different air pressures. Like, so
no,
that was different gas in the ball.
Yeah, I know, but the ball makes it lighter as opposed to, anyway, I still think it doesn't make much of a difference. But the point I wanted to
which
make...
Which was supported by your Mythbusters, you know?
Nothing.
Reference.
No, we don't think it was, but the Mythbusters were testing something else.
You darn people have sidetracked me. I forgot what I was going to say.
You're talking about how far you can kick the ball?
No, that was... Anyway.
That tackle zone. Richie getting penalised.
Ah, yes, Richie.
Remember him?
Yes, I do remember Richie.
So how's it going there, Greg?
All blessed captain.
Screw you. I was thinking, along the lines of Richie getting penalised, is very much perhaps similar to the way that, or perhaps a theory, with when we've had George Smith as acting captain while Sterlo has been away.
The Brumbies, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that having a captain who is so close to being penalised all the time, is always in there, always like pushing the rules. When you're getting pinged a lot,
the ref only has to call one person out.
I know, but how does that affect the morale of the team? When suddenly the captain's being pulled out all the time, does that bring everyone else down?
I think
in some teams it might, but when it's Richie McCaw who's your captain, and particularly in his role where his job is to go and try and break the rules and not get caught, it's a little disappointing if he is getting caught, but I don't think it would affect the team that much.
No. There's too many experienced players in the Crusaders to fall for that.
Right, well, how's that for a ref then? When the person who you're supposed to be using to instill discipline in the rest of the team is the one who's breaking it.
Well, yeah, that's
why he sent him off.
Yeah.
So, hey.
That's why he got sent off.
And his second week in a row getting sent off, isn't it?
Yep.
Well, at least he doesn't have to worry about a third.
Yeah.
I guess getting pinged like that has actually played more into the Bulls' hands. You know, they can play more of their set piece game and, you know.
You're giving Hugo more kicks. Frankly, I don't know why McCaw didn't ease off on what he was trying to do.
Because they were getting smashed up in the middle.
Well,
very interesting thing, actually, after, you know, effectively, you know, what was a match-winning performance for the Bulls, that Hugard's actually been left out of the extended squad for the Springboks.
Yeah, Jake White doesn't want to play 10-man rugby. And
I wouldn't, frankly, I wouldn't care whether you're playing 10-man rugby or not. Someone who can bang about 59 metres, you put in your squad anyway, just in case you need to play 10-man rugby.
Just in case it's rainy on that day. Yeah.
That's right.
I think Hugard's had done, but I think Bulls fans would have a lot of reason to be feeling a little dirty. I mean, the final still has to be played, and there has to be a final assessment of who's the best fly half in South Africa, but... I've got to say, I like the old Springbok system they had before they were banned from international rugby, where the winner of their provincial competition was the Springboks, and then that team was able to choose other players that it wanted to bring in. And I think there's something to be said for that. But,
Definitely. I mean, Team Cohesion.
You've got to look at and think in this instance, okay, with the fly half position, particularly for the boxes, how you know, how many other Firehouse are picking. Okay, you would assume there's going to be Bush James for the Sharks.
Yeah.
But who else? Maya Bosman? Wouldn't have thought so.
No, you wouldn't have thought so. And, I mean, Bush James had a blinder for the Sharks.
Well, he's been playing much better since he actually learned to tackle.
Yeah. Certainly less controversial. I'm personally a little surprised. But White's a man who thinks he can. Seems all the coaches at the national level think they know better than all the other Super 14 coaches, and they can create
and the ability and the actual teams. Yeah.
Yes, I think they create whole new teams, like Matt Giddo and Harper.
It seems very much like any manager is. I must make changes to make my position worthwhile.
Yes.
To be to stamp my authority on it.
Yeah.
Change for change's sake, rather than
my authority.
Exactly.
But along those lines,
for Wallabies coach.
Along what you were saying about the Springboks.
That'd be easy for me. I just pick the Brumbies. I'd like to see somebody pick a better.
Oh, I'm scruffy.
Yeah, okay.
Like, where do you draw the line? You say, okay, there's combinations here that work. You cannot replace the player knowledge of particular combinations in like a 1 or 2 week training camp.
Well, that's why they then sequester them into fortresses for months at a time.
But do you say, okay, well, we'll pull this combination in from a fourth or fifth or 14th ranked team and expect them to beat a world class team?
Well, what's this got to do with the Crusaders versus Bulls game?
Well, I think there's nothing else we need to really say about this game and move on.
Well, okay, so you're saying
other than there's proven combinations in both teams, and whether they at national selection level for both the Box and the All Blacks, whether like, you know, what's the merit in drawing these combinations from teams that are obviously very successful combinations?
I would have thought an astute coach would have waited until after this final before making these decisions.
Yes, same.
Especially for the Springboks.
Yeah.
Right, it's all good and well for the Australian, the Wallabies and the All Blacks to be making decisions.
They've got nothing more that they can sort out, but the South Africans have got their two best teams playing in a final. Now, if it was at Loftus, I can understand you could say, okay, the World Cup isn't going to be played at altitude. But playing in Durban down by the seaside, South African winter isn't that different from France. I think Jake White's being very silly by rushing his selections when he's going to find out this weekend who the best players in his country are.
And more important, it's a pressure game. There is really, like...
That is exactly what you want to simulate.
Well, it really sort of shows who will be able to perform under pressure.
Well, this is also what the whole purpose of this level of competition is. It's a stepping point to national selection.
Yeah.
It's not, Joe's under 10s or, your club side at first grade.
Well, it's not like White's being able to drag these players off the training.
This is an international provincial competition. These guys are, the best. Just about the best of what they do.
Anyway, I think it's mad. I think that's good for the rest of us that White's being such an idiot.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Yep.
We got a chance.
Speaking of international coaches being idiots, Graham Henry's decision to drag the All Blacks out of Super 14 at the start of the season.
Well, I was about to say, I was going to say.
Robbie Deans has been extremely critical.
Yeah.
I think it's been shown up for what it is. It's a very stupid idea because there are no South African,
New Zealand teams
in the grand final.
Okay, do you think that's okay? We had two New Zealand teams competing for that finals position. Do you think it was a case of one, it would have been effectively one extra game at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, but I think
that would have got them that home final, home semi rather than the away semi.
I don't think the problem was the start of the season. I think the problem was the disruption the returning All Blacks caused in both camps. Because remember, both teams were top of the table
Crusaders didn't get there for about five matches or something.
Well, the Blues certainly were, and once they got their players back, they were more disrupted than.
Things started.
Crusaders lost two early games.
Yeah. But things fell apart for both squads to some extent with the return of what should have been their best players. And I'm willing to put that down to disruption. But here's a thought. I'm not sure if this is a cunning plan, but it might work out for the best. Because the weight of expectation on the All Blacks, which they have crumbled under in many a World Cup semi-final now, is diminished significantly as a result of this. They're still quality players. They've still got a World Cup to work up to speed in four matches.
Having said that, you're talking about the disruption. Using the Blues as an example.
Yeah.
The Blues player got sent back from South
Africa. Ali Williams, he'll still walk into the All Blacks, even though he's not good enough to play for Auckland.
Yep.
Yeah.
Initially, Auckland said they'd send him home for basically breaking club rules.
Yeah. He was pissed.
Getting pissed regularly.
And being disruptive and basically saying rude things to his
His team members basically said they weren't prepared to play with him.
Yeah, the team disciplinary committee, yeah, which is made up of players, made the final rule. Yeah,
I said we're not prepared to play with him.
Yeah. Now, having said that, you don't know what machinations went on with Nusa Fora talking to those players in the disciplinary committee.
Same. I don't know. From what I've read, it seems to be mainly run by the players, not by the
We'll put you back on the squad if you discipline Ali Williams and send him.
Yeah. So we don't know what.
But even Williams admitted that his performance to date, that he was rusty and so forth. Mm. Now, I think that there is quite
he's
a number...
because he had 8 weeks out.
Quite a number of All Blacks came out, they were rusty as hell. They haven't had the time to get that team cohesion or to run out the spiders.
Yeah.
Have been played less, particularly in teams like the Blues, because they weren't up to scratch compared to the guys who are playing regularly.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be a real disadvantage for the...
In my personal observations...
I see it's more of a question of who's going to be getting actually picked in the All Black side. Is it going to be the guys who are playing those first 8 weeks and they stepped up and got noticed?
No.
That's it?
Because Henry thinks he knows better than all the other
coaches. There might be a couple of exceptions. I can think of, obviously. I don't like him.
Yeah.
Are the guys who were kept out going to be getting dropped?
No, look, I think Henry's got too much pride. Graham Henry's got too much pride, and he wouldn't want to admit that he'd made such a horrible mistake. So I think he's going to push on with that squad, even though I think
there might be a couple of fringe players who
some people got injured.
Okay, yeah, like Lewaki, Doug Hallett, that could push for selection in the game day 22.
Looking to the future, do you think this plan will ever happen again?
No, I think this will get marked as an idea that didn't work. Well, if they win the World Cup, they'll do it again.
Only World Cup years, obviously.
Yeah,
sorry, obviously.
Yeah.
Too expensive musical balls like every year. Keep doing this.
I think the best way to get fit to play rugby and to get playing rugby well is to play rugby. And I don't think anyone's yet come up with training drills, mainly because they're too worried about injury, that are hard enough and tough enough to...
if they really needed to, they could skip one international game and, do some more strength and conditioning then.
Yeah. I just think this was pride on the part of the coaching staff, thinking that they knew more than anyone else did.
I think it's a new strategy. Okay, they've had the favourite tag for a number of World Cups now, and it hasn't come through. Other countries who don't do it, have managed to sort of come through and win.
Well, this conditioning program is new this year.
It's something they're trying different. So, our expectation is that we will win. We haven't been able to do that because something's missing. Let's try something different. And, maybe it'll work, maybe it won't.
We'll see.
Let's go to a break come back and talk some more crap.
Okay, this is Tom Woodward from his Blue Day Requiem CD with Drinking the Dregs.
Disappear, but like all good magicians, when I need you, you'd reappear. 'Cause I won't be near him, and you. Every day we're drinking the dregs. Well, life is not a circus, and you and I. But if I were to love you, I would only drag you down. 'Cause I won't be near, and you will not be here every day. We're drinking the dregs. Your stare is like a vacuum. I fall in and I don't stop. When I was a stallion crawling out and falling, drinking the dregs.
Drinking the Dregs, which we're not doing at the moment, from Tom Woodward, from the Blue Day Requiem CD.
What would a Tom Woodward do if Tom Woodward could...
Who is one of our advertisers?
We have actually featured the Blue Day Requiem CD before.
At the start of the season, but we thought we'd bring one back, partly because I like the song, partly because we saw his band on Friday night. Nick.
Yes, and it was good.
What do you remember of it?
Actually,
what kind of mask did you wear?
Talking, of course, about the Jester Ball.
The Jester, not Jesters. It was an Albert Hall.
Friday night.
Absolutely awesome gig.
Not really a gig, more an event with music in it.
Yeah, actually, you're probably right there. The Jester.
He was very good.
He was excellent. I had a bit of a chat to the ladies of the...
They weren't ladies of the night, they were just ladies who were there.
The ladies who did the the dancing.
The burlesque dancers.
Burlesque, that was what I was looking for.
Probably one of the largest fancy dress events that Canberra's seen.
I would say so, yeah.
It was very impressive.
I've heard an estimate of 400 people. I thought that was low side, but that could be 400.
Unless you call a tiger party at one of the unis or something.
Yeah, but that's not bringing people together from totally different backgrounds.
I met people from all over the place there. It was fantastic.
more than interest in burlesque and B&D.
Well, no, it was funny.
Not necessarily.
There was people who like jumped in from all sorts of things just because they thought it sounded cool, and there was some people who put in a hell of a lot of effort, and others who, like ourselves, like...
Oh, hang on, we've had more effort than some.
Some.
We wore
but
a mask.
Having said that, I mean,
everyone who didn't wear a mask was scum, and everyone else knew it.
Yeah,
and
I decided I was going at 3 o'clock that afternoon and spent, what?
$20
on a mask.
Yeah.
And did you buy a blank mask and paint that yourself?
Yes, I did, actually.
And his face was covered in little black marks.
there was people who had been planning this for six, seven weeks, and had spent the same amount of money as me and had a complete outfit that they'd bought for like $2 or $3 here and there on eBay.
You're talking about women.
Bloody oath, it was impressive.
Prior preparation and planning prevents a piss poor party showing.
Yes.
I think, you know, when you had your little handcuff, and did you see I snuck that into one of the photos?
I did, you bastard.
I missed the handcuff. I will have to look. For those of you missing it, we've got a whole bunch of photos on the Jester Ball.
Yes.
Yes.
One of the stories that.
And most of them are rather impressive. A lot of them are out of focus, and a lot of them are very red.
No, there was no out of focus. That was just long exposure causing blurring.
Anyway, back to rugby.
Yes.
Rugby, what's that?
And there was no rugby at the Jester Ball.
No, not even any talk of rugby.
Not that you noticed. Nonetheless, what's happening in local events? We talked a lot about South African and Kiwi rugby earlier in the session.
Because they're the only things left in the Super 14.
I'm sure there's plenty going on in the Australian squad. I note that it's been cut down to a 39 from the original 59.
59 to 37.
37, is it?
What's these numbers Conley's pulling
out
of his bottom?
A couple of notable omissions. Another 7 to go in a week.
A couple of notable omissions.
Jeremy Paul
and Nick Henderson.
The best performing front row in Australian rugby
has been...
And they're ditching two
thirded.
Of the three.
Yeah.
And I have to say, in my personal opinion, the best two-thirds of that front row at that. But
well...
I think they're going
to... Shep has had a great work rate.
Shep has had a great season and a much improved season.
And not as many tight end props in the squad remaining.
Yeah. So he's probably going to get...
But what amazes me is they've got rid of Henderson in favour of Dunning.
Yeah.
I mean, and Baxter and Robinson.
I mean, what?
My God.
Connolly wants a fat man to kick field goals for him, does he?
And he wants Adam Fry for the oppositions to run it because he's got, with his short arms, he can't tackle them.
Yeah, interesting. Like, we did comment on this one when we saw the original list with 19 Waratahs and 17 Brumbies.
We're still
at 13 Tars by my count. We might have missed one or two. 13 Tars in there. 12 Brumbies now. There's still, what, you think a disparity of performers? Or are these guys just
we've got less Brumbies than that, I think.
There's less of them anyway, but including Josh Holmes, who's still not officially a Brumby, I wouldn't really say until he's played a game.
No, I wouldn't say so either.
We've dropped six Brumbies.
So we're down to eight.
No, we had 17.
Yeah, down to 11. Sorry, it was the fourth one.
Is this my conspiracy theory hat? Is this a bit of a deal because of the AAU chairman?
Yeah, I think it is.
Get these guys in.
Yep.
I do note they're talking about fast-tracking Dan Bickman back for the first test of the season, even though he hasn't played a game all year.
There's big money in Sydney for the Waratahs having Wallaby players.
But having said that...
They might actually get another 1,000 people turning up for the game.
They don't get any promotional deals without it.
But you look at the real money in Australian rugby, and where is it? It's in Perth.
No.
Well, it's in Sydney.
Perth has a lot of money compared to Queensland and the ACT. There is a lot more money in Sydney than there is in Perth.
I would be surprised if the Waratahs, particularly with their crowd performances this year...
But
New South Wales Rugby Union is always bankrupt, but that's where the money is, that's where the marketing is.
They're always bankrupt, that's why they're always asking the AAU for more money.
Okay, think about it this way. All right. In terms of the person who picks the team, John Connolly, who is John Connolly appointed by? He's appointed by one ACT rep, one Perth rep, three New South Walesmen, and three Queenslanders.
Do we even have an ACT rep on there?
No. Sometimes we do, sometimes we don't.
I think at the moment they're from the Northern Territory. The other states and territories...
That's who it's appointed by. We're talking about the AAU chairman here. That's our one rep. That's who it's appointed by, all right? Now, these Queenslanders and New South Welshmen have been playing it for a number of years, and I would say the balance of power in the political arena, that is the AAU boardroom, is with New South Wales.
But surely the Wallabies should be about winning games.
Well, you'd think so, but if the Waratahs were about winning games, they'd win games too.
The more of your selection is not about winning games, it's a business.
Yeah.
Okay? And in any business, there are going to be initiatives that aren't necessarily palatable or make as much revenue as other initiatives.
Mm. And so I think that's stupid ones.
Yeah, I would say so, and rugby happens to make a lot of them because of the clubby nature of the administrators.
That's right. You know, everyone's always said, for a long time, it's like all Sydney rugby is the be-all and end-all.
We'll just quickly go through the forwards that we've got left at the moment. Al Baxter, Rodney Blake, Ben Robinson, here we go, Mr. Matt Dunning, fat boy, Guy Shepherdson, Adam Fryer, the short arms, Stephen Moore, Mark Chisholm, Nathan Sharp, Dan Vickerman, who hasn't played a game for however long, Hugh McMiniman, James Horwill, Rocky.
Good showing, James Horwill. Yep. Surprised there.
Rocky Elsom, George Smith, Phil War, Stephen Hoyles, David Lyons, Wycliffe Palu, and Johnny Tawaki.
That's not a bad list as lists go. I mean, right. Dunning and Baxter.
Adam Wallace Harrison or Al Campbell.
Yeah.
All right, for the backs we have George Regan, Sam Cordingley, Josh Holmes, Steve Larkin, Sam Norton Knight, Barry Barnes, Matt Giddo, Sterling Mordlock, Adam Ashley Cooper, I'm glad they kept him, Ryan Cross, Scott Staniforth, Lottie Tkiri, Mark Gerrard, Digby Ioane, Drew Mitchell, Lachlan Turner, Julian Huxley, and Cameron Shepherd. So, and they're saying Huxley's probably the shoo-in for the starting fullback spot.
No one else there, is there, really?
No.
So who do you think of the 7 are going to be booted?
Oh, let's not
worry about that.
Agonise over that. But look,
Dunning, Turner,
Dunning, Turner, Baxter.
Dunning's going to be the loose head prop. I'm really sorry about that, particularly for Wallabies rugby.
We won't get away with it against Wales. The Welsh scrum is going to tear us to pieces if they play the same frat house scrum.
And the Welsh have said that the team they're sending over is going to be completely different to the team that was in the Six Nations.
Yeah, and idiots like Bloody Crowden and
I reckon Ben Robinson's going to be the loose head friendly. I'll put money on that one.
Idiots have been running down this Welsh squad that they're sending out. For a start, what about the squad the Wallabies sent to Wales last year? But secondly, it's got like Simon Hook's one of these players. They're saying, he's not part of the Six Nation campaign. Simon Hook tore us a new bumhole last year in Cardiff.
And the Six Nation campaign was a failure.
Yeah, so they've changed the team.
And they're going to rip us a new arsehole again. It's going to be a wake-up call. Now, hopefully we'll learn something from it. But
I don't.
We've only got 2 weeks to find out, so...
They'll sack Regan.
All right, well, who have we got? We've got a couple of movements
there. That's something I would like to talk about as well. Like, Connolly is...
Are they setting up for the fall?
Connolly has never been a fan of Gregan.
Yeah, that's Connolly's a fat, stupid bastard.
Now, there's been a lot of stuff in the press recently that Connolly has been saying that there is a place in the Wallabies for Gregan and that he hasn't made a decision and this, that and the other. If Gregan isn't in the team, who's the captain?
No.
Phil Wall.
Phil Wall.
Dan Vickerman.
Yeah.
Nathan Sharp.
Yeah. Connolly's got a soft spot for Sharpie.
Yep.
I think Sharpie is a soft captain.
Yeah, no, I think Sharpie's a crap captain because he lets his body language.
The entire team reads his body language.
Doesn't help that he's got massive slump shoulders to start with.
It does, but every time something goes wrong, he goes bitches and moans on the
bounces his head. Nothing goes. Oh, I reckon the captaincy would go to Chugger.
I reckon he should too. I think he's been a captain than most of the others.
As we've discussed, things that should happen and things that do happen seem to be rather different.
I reckon I'll go to War.
I think War's a shoo-in.
Why would you pick War? Just because he's a better captain than...
Just because he's a...
It's a shame he's not a better bloody player than George Smith.
He's a Sydney Golden boy and he'll shore up Connolly's position, which is tenuous at best at the moment after last year's disastrous season.
Let's not sack him just before the World
Cup. I think sack him now. Yeah. Right now.
While we have a chance.
not going to happen. You and I both know it.
Come on, let the players train themselves.
Playing guitar at number 9. It will be an absolute disaster. It's a 10.
Let's be serious about this. Federer won 4 championships without a coach. I reckon the Wallabies can win a bloody World Cup without a coach.
Well, one Gregan G would probably be doing a lot of the coaching if that were the case. Look, beer review.
Yes.
We're drinking the Little Creatures Pilsner, which is selling at $6 a bottle, and a rather small bottle at that.
And I do like the fact that the bottle says it says 330 mils dash 11.6 fluid ounces.
That's because they export and they don't want to duplicate the printing.
I do like a beer that puts its...
So you can do the maths to figure out what a fluid ounce is?
No, I do like just the whole fluid ounce thing. It's old worldy to me. I like it.
The oldie.
Okay, I like it. Old worldy.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I've got to say, for a brown bottle beer, they've actually got really classy, just the minimal amount of labelling.
And no bloody engraving or embossing.
It's little creatures, mate. They can't afford it.
Oh, there's a bottle.
Where?
No refund.
Yeah. Oh, that's fantastic.
Okay. No refill.
But hang on, where's the ingredients?
There's nothing. It's
just
clean.
It's just got beer in it. Oh my god.
It's made from beer.
I'm not sure how they legally get away with not having beer.
I was about
beer
to say, you can't actually legally get away with that.
It could be because they don't put any additives in.
No, come on, they've got the percentage of alcohol on the top.
No, you need to have ingredients if it's ingested by people these days.
Yeah, it'll have water, malt.
The only reason you can get around not putting your ingredients on is if you have intellectual property you need to protect, in which case you put on there, do not ingest, seek medical attention which is what you get in my
opinion. The bar staff here, thinking that the back of the label was not very anesthetic, have actually peeled the labels off the back.
You know what it could be?
I don't see that happening.
You know what it could also be? It could be that these things are only sold in six packs and all the ingredients are actually on the labelling of the six pack.
I doubt it.
Good, but, it's good. It's possible. Right.
Let's just say they cases. Do it and move on. What do you think it tastes like?
Well, I love it.
Hang on. I just want to point out the little cherub on the front.
That's his
with
foot.
The beard.
That's his foot.
No, he does have a penis.
Oh, come on.
A very small one.
A very small, but he's a cherub.
He's a cherub. A great big horse-like shawl on him.
Some of them do. Hey, look at the classical art.
Anyway...
It's a smaller than average one, but it is there, unlike the crazy frog, which had his removed.
I must admit...
And then he sat on a giant rocket.
I must admit, I don't drink my beer to look at cherubs' penises.
You're missing out.
It's a trademark penis as well.
I'm not sure if it's a trademark. I have a friend in Perth, and she always says that there's a great little brew pub for the little creatures one.
Oh,
Conveniently, they actually give you the address on the bottle here. News Road, Fremantle. So I imagine if you drive down Muse Road
last year, I went to the Little Creatures Brewery. It's on the wharf. It is absolutely gorgeous. It's a beautiful big warehouse. You can wander up on these flybys over the vats. They do fantastic pizzas and all that sort of stuff while you're like drinking all this great beer.
What do we think of this beer?
It's a pilsner.
It's all good.
No, it's good.
How much is it?
I think I like
pilsners. $6 a bottle. That's pub prices.
I even like it that much. Even on Tuesdays.
I think I'd prefer to go a pint of something plainer rather than this.
Yeah, I'd rather go the bright ale myself, would you?
I'd be interested to see what it costs a case.
I would say it'd be at least a $50 case.
$50 case, realistically... I could pass on that,
mate.
I could do that.
Depends how wealthy you are. Of course, we might not be watching rugby in if we couldn't afford $50 a case.
Yeah. I think it's a really well put together pilsner. I think possibly a little too well put together in that I couldn't tell you it was Little Creatures over anyone else's pilsner, but that's hard to make as a valid criticism.
Let's put that challenge to us for some time.
Where
we'll compare pilsners.
The great filter
challenge.
We'll take the
blind
labels
test
off. Blind testing filters.
See what we can pick.
All right. Okay.
And I'd say, ooh, those are all cool. Depends how far through them we get.
All right, so we're happy with this, but I think I prefer the Bright Ale, but everyone else
not
likes
too bad.
I think the Bright Ale's a more interesting beer.
I think it's a crisper.
Not about crisper, just more interesting.
There's nothing wrong with this one.
No,
there is not. And I must say, Pilsner's one of my favourite styles of beer.
Alrighty.
Let's move on. Okay, look.
We have a game of rugby.
We have a game of rugby here.
Some between this, I don't know, this...
Bulls and the Sharks.
I know we'd like it only to be 12 and like...
I don't know who they are.
Warriors and the Reds, but it's 14.
So there's two teams in South Africa, apparently. 19th of May, 3 p.m. in Durban. Is that 3 p.m. Australian time, I'm assuming?
No, it is. That's 3 p.m.
So they bring this up forward, so it won't be too ungodly here.
No, well, not too ungodly. I wonder if that's how much preview is on that. But, Sharks, Bulls, Durban.
It must be about 11 o'clock here,
right? What do you think, guys?
Not horrible.
let's get into it.
It will be 11 o'clock because the Sharks Blues game was at 11 o'clock last week, and that was a 3 p.m. game.
That's not too bad at all.
There we go. Yeah, we might even start after that.
We'll have a few more pills on this one. We've got a bit of a mixed bag. Nick and myself are going with the Sharks. Patina, John Hall.
Going to
the Bulls.
I reckon Hougaard's got it over them, and I reckon the Bulls pack is just too big and strong.
I think the Sharks are in a terrible position preparing for this match. They're playing two teams. They don't know if they're playing the team that can score 93 points in a game, or the team that will
grind out and score.
Well, if the Sharks are smart, they'll play their own game, and the Bulls are the ones who are going to have to alter their game to play the Sharks.
I think you're mad. The Sharks were very shaky against a very poor Auckland outfit, and I think what's going to happen is the reason why I'm on top of the table. It's because I'm right about this shit, and you guys know nothing.
Well, we'll see at about 5
5 o'clock Durban time.
5 o'clock Durban time.
Yeah.
Now I reckon the Sharks have it. I would say that the Bulls scrape through into the finals on the back of a.
You could hardly say the Reds, but it was over the Reds.
Much better performance.
But no one else did that
last week against the Crusaders, but even the Brumbies showed that they could beat the Crusaders as well.
Yeah, the Brumbies set the temple,
as
other
did the Chiefs.
Following. Yeah.
As did the Chiefs, and I think the Sharks have had very few peers this season.
Yep.
And did the Bulls over during the regular round.
You think the Campisi factor gives them a genuine back line?
Yeah, it gives them a genuine back line. They've got a bit more creativity and they're a more rounded team.
They do have Percy Montgomery.
He won on the gun the other day. He was beautiful.
Yeah, but he also has a tendency to make horrible mistakes.
Oh, mate, Percy is the modern day Campo. Yeah.
That's a very good point.
But I think the Sharks have got just a little bit more flair, a little bit more creativity.
I agree with both
those statements. To put it over the Bulls, and I'm not sure that the Bulls can adjust their game plan mid-game.
Well, we've seen that they're flexible.
I know that the Sharks can.
Yeah. Now, crowd factor.
It's going to be massive. It's going to be absolutely huge.
I think it's going to be that rarest thing in Super Rugby where there's going to be an awful lot of Bulls fans in that crowd.
South African rugby anyway.
Not just South African rugby, but this level of rugby where
they're not just
come from a long way apart.
Yeah, and not only that, they're not just going to be supporting their local team. There's going to be plenty of Bulls fan who live in Durban.
Yeah,
and would have been vice versa.
Yeah, but I think we're probably more divided along state lines, I guess. But
I'm not sure about that. The boys from the Veldt are pretty.
I can see big screen TVs going up all over, South Africa with street watching rugby.
Yeah, well, maybe not in Cape Town. They're a little jealous down there. That's true.
There'll be radios all over the country.
Will there be a lot of tries? Here's the question. Anyone want to predict that?
No,
because it doesn't have to be. You win the game on who wins.
There's no bonus points.
That's the whole. I think that's what actually came out of the Crusaders Bulls game, was that they weren't out there to get bonus points and score tries. They're out there to win. You win by getting points on the board. Yep. Simple as that.
Now, one point, just looking ahead to next year. Will the Crusaders adjust their style, especially in the forwards, or will other teams continue to smash them through there?
I don't know. The New Zealand teams generally will have a big adjustment next year because they're losing a lot of key players.
A lot of players are going.
Yeah. So is Australia.
But okay, you look at that and you say, okay, what three teams have been dominant in Super Rugby for the past 15 years?
Crusaders,
Blues, Brumbies. They came third, fourth and fifth respectively.
Yeah.
Have we got a sea change in Super 14?
Oh, well, obviously we do, because a new team is finally going to have its own.
But not just a new team, two new teams.
Plenty of teams make finals. Teams that win them that count.
I think we're all talking about this, that you could have tossed a coin and, gone either way with this one.
That was my initial reaction, and then I thought more deeply about it, and then I felt quite confident in tipping the Bulls.
But I thought about it several times, and I thought, tip the Bulls, tip the Sharks, tip the Bulls. But I'd actually jest about before the podcast about tipping a draw, whether I'd got, double my season tally for picking a draw. But that's all we talked about, They want extra time.
You could tip a draw and then tip a team after extra time.
Yeah, I'll be happy to give you the win for that.
Double my season tally.
Yeah. Okay then.
It's gonna be. I seriously think it's gonna be close, and could go either way. But my gut feel is with the Sharks, just for a bit more adaptability and the ability to say we are behind, we need to change our game plan and see that through for 80 minutes.
Yeah.
Which I don't think the Bulls can do.
I don't think anyone can argue that the two best teams through the competition have made the final again.
Yeah, there's been some awesome teams in the comp, but you're dead right there. These two have definitely shined.
Oh, Sharks have been the benchmark.
Yeah.
I think the Bulls have come home very nicely as well.
Okay, anyway, I think that's us done for the night.
And, thank you very much.
Thank you for listening, and we'll be back next week to finish up the season. And
now, just as a teaser, perhaps, are we going to continue a podcast once the APC starts?
ARC.
ARC.
The Australian Rugby Championship.
Are we going to do an Australian Rugby Championship?
You just have to wait and see, won't you?
The plan is...
maybe all right in if you really, really want us to listen to us.
No.
At least someone. One person.
The plan is that we will cover the Australian Rugby Championship. We're working towards trying to get media access for that. I think it's a 50-50 if the competition will even happen. The fact they haven't finalised a draw yet suggests there is problems.
Oh, no. Today came out the... Perth has shown all the games for the entire season that they're playing.
And how many have they sold to Melbourne?
None. Absolutely none. In fact, Perth has done a massive good deal for their supporters. And if you have a look on the ARU website...
Perth's playing all home games.
No, but they have done a... buy three home tickets, get a fourth home ticket free deal.
Okay, but look...
We'll talk about this next week.
We will. Okay, good night.
See ya.